This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
In 1919, he hit 29 home runs and was sold to the New York Yankees.
A three-run home run for Bucky Dent. The Yankees now lead by a score of 3-2. Bill Lee is now going over to a couple of the Yankees, and there they go again.
Swan hits it to deep left. That might send the Yankees to the World Series.
Veritek and A-Rod going at it. Roberts is going. Posada's throw. Roberts, safe.
And what can I say? Just dip my heart and call the Yankees my daddy.
Welcome to Fanbase, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports, episode 169. John Senecal, the originator, the creator, the co-host, and myself, Brian Shackman here. Listen, we're getting close to the end. Mathematically, the Sox aren't out of it, but they're done. The question is, will they have a winning record? And the Yankees are probably going to win the AL East, right? I mean, you're assuming that's going to happen.
Yeah, they should win the AL East. I mean, they could have wrapped it up on Tuesday night against the
Orioles, but they didn't do that. So time will tell. But giving, five games left to go in the season?
As of Wednesday,
I think they've got a good shot at it, considering they got two more against the Orioles, and then they got to play the Pittsburgh Pirates. So
I mean, you feeling good? I mean, you're...
My concern is the best record. You want to beat the Indians out for best record, because right now, as it stands, the Yankees and Indians would have the byes in the first round. But you want that best record. You want to play at home. You know, I mean, you want to play in front of your fans.
In terms of scheduling, you know, I think that, I mean, the Indians end the season with the Astros, which you say, well, that's tough. But the Astros are probably just going to rejigger their. Because they can't get the best record. They clinch the division. So they're just going to just try to position their starters so they can start the postseason. So they truly don't care about those games.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing that they do have going for them is they're a solid team.
The Astros are.
A very solid team. So they will, regardless of who they parade out there on the mound, give the Indians a run for their money. But like you said, the Indians are going to play full scale because they want that
best record. They're the Guardians.
The Indians. They're always going to be Indians to me. So yeah, the Guardians will play, full tilt.
Our producer correcting it is. I'm with you there. But then the Yankees, they got Pittsburgh. And Pittsburgh is not a bad team, but they're certainly not the Houston Astros.
No, Pittsburgh obviously isn't a bad team. They kind of underachieved this year. But their big story, obviously, is Paul Skeens. And the Yankees, according to Derek Shelton, the manager, will face Paul Skeens. Yeah. In that series, so Friday, Saturday, or Sunday,
he's scheduled to go Saturday.
I'm not going to go. I think my son might be going because he's going to take
it's
the
not
Fairfield
that far.
Bus. No, he was going to go down Friday night, but they have some sort of formal dance, so he should probably go Saturday, I would think, because then you can see Skeens.
Oh yeah,
pitch.
They're saying that. I mean, you can get in for as low as like $7 on StubHub.
I was surprised how little fans were at the game on Tuesday night against the Yankees, the Orioles series, because that's it's a big game, really, when you think about it. But it is a Tuesday night. It is a school night. It is New York City. They slowly filter into the stadium, but still, I feel like there should have been more fans in the stands.
I'd be interested to see what it's like in the early rounds of the postseason. I mean, for the Red Sox, to me, I just want them to have a winning record, to be honest. And I don't have any other feeling. I mean, we've talked about this on my morning show on WTIC News Talk 1080, that there's two takeaways. One is like having Casas and Trevor Story back changes the team. Mm-hmm. And if they had those two and a healthy Devers, they probably would have won the wild card. I mean, I think that that's safe to say, despite all their relief pitching problems. So you can make an argument that the season wasn't as bad as it kind of felt. But my ultimate point, and I think I made it a little bit last week, is that I don't think this team can be great if Devers is your alpha.
No.
Right? So, like, I think that you can talk about whether they're playoff competitive, but championship competitive, there's just not no way. He's just not – he's not a Mookie Betts. He's not – he's just not an – he doesn't have that, and I don't think he wants it. So he got his money. Good for him. But I go into the offseason just really wondering what it's going to take – to give them that feeling that they could actually compete for something bigger.
You know, and he's shut down for the rest of the season.
Yeah, Devers. He's done.
I mean, I would think that the Red Sox, they have the alpha sitting there and waiting with Jaron Duran. I would think he would be a perfect alpha on that team. Mm. I mean, obviously, he's not one of the guys that's locked up, and you get over his little transgressions with his comments, that kind of stuff. That will blow over. That's gone. I feel like he could be the person to step up in that
situation.
You think
he could be that big a star?
I really do. I mean, he's got all the tools. All the tools are there. He just doesn't have the contract yet. I mean, if they want to keep him there, they got to give him one of those deals like Bayo got.
Yeah, I mean, you have him for – he must have at least 2+ years.
I would think he's probably 3 years away at least until
– So if you give him a 6-year, you can AAV it at a lower number because you're giving him – he probably could get like – 8 to 12 in arbitration maybe sometime soon. So if you give him an AAV of like 15 to 20, you can get 3 years of free agency back. I mean, I don't know why they wouldn't do that. And then and obviously if it ever soured, it makes him really tradable. Like all those guys that I do think it's the best economics to take a guy who you know is going to be good and buy back some of that free agent years for upping your arbitration years, because then it's just they're so valuable. If they end up good, they're so valuable.
Yeah, especially a guy like him where you can change the game. He's got speed. He's got power. He can play some good defense. So, I mean, he's got the tools. I mean, that's a player that the Red Sox should work on keeping. But going back to your comment about health, right, that's what it always comes down to. If your team's healthy, we saw it in 2023 with Judge. When he went down, the Yankees went down. Yep. But good teams absorb that, right? They have backup plans, and that's what good teams do. And, you know, the Red Sox really didn't have that backup plan for Story at shortstop.
Let's whip around to a couple things. You know, I one more Red Sox note. I don't wear jerseys. Like, I'm not a jersey wearer. It goes back to my days of, like, actually being a journalist. But the one jersey I do have is someone gave me for my birthday a City Connect shirt. And I love the yellow and the blue. And I didn't know this, but you said they're going to make it like a fixture.
Yeah, so the Red Sox announced that they're gonna make the yellow City Connect jerseys a permanent fixture, which I think they said is replacing the blue. Like, there's three jerseys. There's the red, the white, and then the blue alternative jersey they use.
Well, they do like a white and a gray is on the road.
A gray, yeah.
And then they use the blue. I don't know if it's 10, 15, 20, I don't know how many times they use it.
Well, that one's going away.
And the yellow is going to replace the blue.
Yeah, as they say now, permanently now, but you know, I mean, who knows?
And the stuff sells. I'm telling you, that stuff sells.
Oh, of course it sells.
Crazy.
And those jerseys are insanely expensive. I was down at the Camden Yards, and like their City Connect jerseys were going for like $400 in the store.
Are you serious?
I mean, come on now. I mean, that's stadium prices, but they're not going to be less than $300 if you buy them on the open market, if they're real.
Well, there was a stretch where the Bogarts City Connect, when he was in his last year, you couldn't get it. It was the official merchandise was actually sold out.
I mean, it's as much a marketing ploy as it is.
But even as you said off the air, you're like, they're going to keep it this way until they don't. But it's actually smart. It's actually smart because people actually really love the shirt. Let's whip around. I'm going to give you a team. You give me your take. Houston.
Houston, I think, other than the Padres, is the most dangerous team that's going to go into the postseason in Major League Baseball. Yordan Alvarez is a question mark. He hurt his knee sliding into second base like a week ago. So, you know, I believe he will play regardless, but Yordan Alvarez not at 100% can be exploited, right? But the rest of the team is their pitching has been kind of put together, but they're excelling. Their bullpen is great, and we know all about their hitting. It's just been there. I mean, all season you got, you know, Bregman and Peña, and it's just...
I just remember in the playoffs...
Altuve.
When I watched the playoffs with them... You just there's a point where every guy who's at bat, you're like, he could hit it out of the park.
Yeah, seven out of the eight last ALCSs that they've been to.
It's crazy.
And the last time they haven't been was 2020, and it was the Oakland A's.
Yeah. Well, they're you know, I remember reading a piece. I think it was an SI. It might have been an ESPN. This is maybe 8 to 10 years ago, where they're like, this is their formula. They had a new contract, TV contract, to negotiate. They were tanking, and basically they were timing it. And forget about the cheating for a second. They were timing it with the new contract money, which was going to be like a tenfold increase with the draft picks to make a move. And like we talk about the, and we'll talk about the Oakland A's in a second. We talk about these teams that need to have cycles, right? They need to have 3 to 5 bad years to have 2 to 3 years to take a shot at it. What they've done in Houston is really impressive for a team that, even though it's the fourth most populous market in the country, it's not considered like almost like a big market the way we consider LA, Boston, Chicago, and New York. And so,
and their run really all started with Carlos Correa in that draft when they drafted him in the international draft. I think it was like 2012 or something like that, whatever it was. But again, but they're a smart enough organization to cut bait on a player like that. I mean, they took a lot of heat for letting him go, but look what happened. I mean, he barely hung on with the team. He got a 1-year contract, then came back, and he's still battling plantar fasciitis year after year, and he's not the player he used to be.
How about San Diego?
Like I said, the second team that scares me the most. I mean, I think you know, the scary thing about San Diego is they lost their best player, Soto. They lost their manager, and they lost one of their best pitchers, and they a closer in Josh Hader, and they got better. It's unbelievable.
I think expectations when they came down a little, then there was less pressure. I think when they made all those huge signings, and the, you know, I just think there was so much pressure. I think now that the pressure's like off.
Yeah. I mean, they got an excellent lineup. I mean, their lineup is awesome. They're super deep. Their pitching is really good, and their bullpen is insane. I mean, they're 47-11, I think, since the All-Star break. I mean, that's nuts.
That is. I didn't know they were that good.
I mean, that's crazy. They're so good, and and on Tuesday night, they turned a triple play against the Dodgers to end the game with Shohei Ohtani on deck as the winning run, and they locked up a playoff berth by doing that, and they have two more games against the Dodgers, which they could technically
tie first.
And they own the tiebreaker against the Dodgers. So they could upend the whole NL West and the whole NL picture.
Now, coming into midweek, I mean, Arizona's in a tailspin. You know, it seems like everyone in the wildcard race in the National League's kind of been winning except for Arizona. And so you have a dynamic now where the Mets are in a midweek series with the Braves, and if they get swept, they're going to be basically out of the picture. And not for good, but they'll be, you know, Atlanta will jump them. I don't want to talk about Atlanta, actually, or Arizona. I want to ask you about the Mets. Do you think they make it?
Well, I mean, they have a half-game lead as we speak now on Wednesday. You know, the thing that worries me about the Mets is they've been playing so above the ceiling, right? I mean, no one expected what they were going to do, and they've been playing...
Especially how they started.
Yeah, they've been playing so great, and Lindor is hurt, right? He was on deck on Tuesday night to come in and hit, but he's clearly, his back is an issue. And as we all know, as we get older, backs are a hard thing to fix, and especially if you're going to be swinging and playing the field. I don't know the extent of his injury. I would doubt the Mets are going to let on the extent of that injury, and I would think that he is going to suit up regardless of the postseason. But 100%, if he's not 100%, I don't see the Mets rolling the way they do. Because, I mean, it's like the Mets have just been, they've been benefiting so much. Like, Even in games that they're kind of playing close, they'll get a ball to bounce their way, or they'll get the call to go their way. And it's like everything has been going so well for them, you're almost like think it's going to end at some point, and that some point would be the playoffs if they get in. They are the sexy team, right? The OMG and all that.
Matt Stroyes and I, who produces this podcast, we're like, we're in.
How can you not be, right? I mean, it's.
I love Pete Alonso, and I mean, Lindor came off really. The money was a big weight on his shoulders, and now he's playing great.
Yeah, they're a great story. Alonso's in a contract year. You know, you wonder if he's going to be back. I would love to see the Mets get in it. I don't necessarily think the Mets, even if they get in, have the team to win it. Yeah. I just don't see it, especially with like Philadelphia, Milwaukee, even Milwaukee. I mean, I just don't see the Mets taking them out, but. Who knows? It's like they've had magic dust on them since the All-Star break. Actually, since like May.
I think the NL's got such... I mean, you think about the top of it with the Dodgers. We talked about the Padres with the Dodgers and the Phillies. I mean, for Atlanta to be underachieving like the way they are, I just feel like there are more better teams in the NL. But, I mean, who knows? I mean, no one even mentions Milwaukee because they always seem to lose in the first round anyway. So,
yeah.
I mean, I would love it if Milwaukee stuck it to like the Dodgers or something.
It's amazing how well Milwaukee has played. Like, everyone's just waiting for them to just.
They don't even have Yelich.
They had Yelich. They lost their main closer, Devin Williams, for like 2.5 months. They lost their manager.
Yeah.
You know, it's like everything that they couldn't go for them. And we talked about it at the beginning of the season. Like, they just didn't get better.
Yeah.
But they played better. So, I don't see Milwaukee stopping what they've been doing. because they've just been consistent all year. I feel like, you know, I mean, as of we speak now, they're not even far behind for the best record in the NL.
Yeah, I mean, as someone whose team isn't going to be in the postseason, you know, I definitely go underdog. I mean, I would love for San Diego to make a run. I would love for Milwaukee to make a run. I'd love for the Orioles to make
a
run.
You want a Mets-KC rematch from 2015?
Not really. Not really. I don't want the Royals. I can say that much. But he's John Senecal. I'm Brian Shackman. This is episode 169 of Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports. You know, the owner of the Oakland A's writes this letter to the city of Oakland because the season's winding down and they're no longer going to play there, basically saying, we tried and I'm sorry. And I listened to, actually, I saw a clip, Larry Beal. Remember Larry Beal from ESPN? He was a real, I thought Larry Beal was a great anchor. And it turns out he's a very nice guy. I remember when I worked there, he was always really kind. But he left to take a sports job in the Bay Area. And he just eviscerated the ownership group. You know, in the letter, they talked about the seven different proposals they put forward to keep him in. And he was like, every single one of them was flawed and not serious. And he just went off. And he went off. And I think part of it is that, and he was using the Golden State Warriors. It's like, you can do it. If you want to do it, you can do it. And part of me was like, maybe Larry's just mad that he's losing baseball. You know, and all they're going to have basically is basketball.
Yeah.
I mean, and because they lost football too. But I don't know how I feel, because I've been to, you ever go to a baseball game in Oakland?
No, I did.
I went when I was 13 with my dad, and it was huge. And
multi-purpose stadium. It was.
Yeah, it was that late 70s, early 80s where they played football and baseball, and the sight lines are messed up because of it and all this stuff. And they found ways to, listen, they won the World Series.
Back to back.
And they had Billy Beane did his thing that will forever go down in baseball lore because of the book and the movie and this and that. But I don't know. I look at that city and I'm like, maybe they don't necessarily deserve a team. And I'm in Hartford where we don't have anything. So like, I just don't think it fit. People say, well, the fan base is there. It's there. Well, you know what? I say the same thing about the Hartford with the Whalers. Like, if they were there, then why weren't they going?
Yeah, well, I mean, come on. For people to say the fan base is there, the only time that they would show up for that team is when they made the playoffs. And, I mean, they did put solid teams together, and even in the last 10 years, making the playoffs. And in 2001, they made the playoffs. The 2020, they made the playoffs. They actually won the West in 2020.
They actually had a couple of good stretches this season.
Yeah, I mean, they play above their ceiling, but when you're averaging like 8,000 fans a game, and then the third to last game of the seat in your park, you wind up with 30,000 fans. Where were those 24,000 other fans for the last 15 years?
Right. Same to be said with Tampa.
Yeah, it's just like, you can say all you want about you're going to support a team, but there's reasons why the Raiders left. There's reasons why this team is leaving. If you're not going to get the people to show up there, you're not going to be able to support the team, regardless of how much money your owner has. You need the gate. That being said, is it going to change when they go to Las Vegas? I really don't know. I feel like it's a novelty thing where people are going to come in. They're going to get a free comp ticket somewhere. They're going to go over and see a game.
Well, there's conflicting ways to look at it, right? So you take Vegas, which 20 years ago, everyone said there'll never be any major franchise there, to now everyone wants to go there.
Yep.
The NBA is not there. The hockey team, it works.
Yes.
Because it was created from scratch. And when I say they own it, is that it is a Vegas team, right? They got a different name.
Right.
And so the Raiders, the jury's out, right? I mean, the jury is out on the Raiders. And I don't know if it's like you're you know, you just won 20 grand at the Bellagio and they're like, hey, you want two tickets to the Raiders. And I don't know if that culture even still exists.
Now, that's
exists
also
in Vegas.
A once a week thing, too. It's easier to fulfill.
Right. And then you think about the A's. I almost feel like, and I think the A's is an iconic brand in baseball. I do, because I mean the teams, the Reggie Jackson teams, you know, all the way through to the Bass Brothers. But I almost feel like they should do almost like a full relaunch, because I don't know that they're gonna feel ownership of it. I don't know, but they're making the stadium sounds like right sized. Like, I think it should be a relatively small stadium.
It's supposed to be like just over 30,000.
Which,
right?
I think is actually perfect.
Yeah.
Because I think that you don't want Colorado or New York. You don't want that. But Fenway feels kind of right.
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 But I mean, they, like you said, they need an identity. Like, what are they going to call the team? There's, they already have a Las Vegas Aces there, right? I think that's like
WNBA.
So you're not going to call them the Aces. If you call them the A's, everyone's going to kind of associate them with the original name.
Yeah.
Aces would be the logical thing being in Vegas. So, I mean, like, there's not even any talk about if they're going to change their name.
No, no, they're going to keep it. And, well, I haven't heard anything otherwise.
So, like, you're talking about, like, literally, like, no logo changes, none of that. So, like, where's the excitement other than a new 30,000-seat stadium that's going to be state-of-the-art?
Right. Because you've got to create loyalty from the ground up, right? So, I mean, I think the Golden Knights, the fan base is intense, and they love that team. And I think part of it is that they feel like it's theirs. And I don't think they feel like the Raiders are theirs, and I don't think they think the A's are theirs. So I actually think that it would be a little bit bold, and a lot of people would be against it. But I think if they found the right name and brand, they
Yeah, I mean, they need to create a new identity because it's not exactly around the corner from Oakland, so people aren't going to be traveling there. And, you know, the diehard fans will watch it on TV if they can, but You need to establish a whole new base, and that's what concerns me because I just don't know if a city like Las Vegas is going to support 81 MLB games.
Yeah, and I think of football, and I'll just do one more point because I look at, my son loves the LA Chargers. When the Chargers play teams like Dallas or even the Raiders, there are more fans for the other team.
Yeah,
and you don't want that. You don't want that. And, you know, Nevada's a transplant culture anyway. And I don't know. I feel like there's a lot that could be done there. And I think it might mean closing the door on the A's.
So Las Vegas is going to have like 200 of their own fans and a bunch of transplant fans that don't even know who they're rooting for.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's pretty accurate. He's John Senecal. I'm Brian Shackman. This is Fanbase, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports. You know, in terms of the percentage of who contributes the most of content to this podcast, I mean, John, it's probably like 80-20. I didn't know it was the anniversary.
Well, let's talk about Oakland real quick again. Leave Oakland, I want to just talk real quick because you know I'm a huge supporter of the Wave, right? You know I love the Wave, right? And so when you're talking about like research.
I love the Wave.
And I looked into the Oakland Coliseum, which, you know, is gone after this year, 57 years. But what was crazy is the Wave originated in Oakland Coliseum.
How did you find that out? Was that Wikipedia?
No,
crap?
No. This was another article. Then I went to Wikipedia, and then I did a more Google. So I did. I always do a kind of a three-tiered approach.
You need to.
You can't just go by what you read. But so going back about the Wave, it was supposedly started by a guy named Crazy George Henderson. Now, George Henderson was a cheerleader at Cal State in 1968. And after he graduated from Cal State, he worked for the California Golden Seals, which was an NHL team, at the time. And he was known for banging on a drum and being really loud and getting the crowd into the game. And it actually turned out that he had left at the NHL, worked for the San Jose Quakes, which is a soccer team. And then he went on to the NFL working for the Chiefs and the Chiefs and the Oilers. And there was actually a rule put in the NFL basically based around him for crowd noise because he would get the crowd so crazy that it would drown out like the opposing signal caller. So there was a rule adopted that said like no excessive noise making rule generated by your home team. So I thought that was interesting. That was 1989. But the Wave, getting back to the Wave, which
When was it supposedly invented?
1981, apparently, in Oakland Coliseum against your New York Yankees. So apparently he was in the stands and he started this wave, like getting people up. And what happened was the next section, he was trying to get everybody up and the next section didn't realize it until afterwards. And then they stood up after the first section thing. And then the next section looked and they were like, wait a minute, we were supposed to stand up. And then they stood up and then all of a sudden, within a couple tries, this wave thing originated.
Huh, is that true? Is that really?
That's what it says. That's according to the internet, and the internet never lies. We know that.
Do they still do it at Yankee Stadium?
I mean, I think they try to pull off the Wave everywhere.
Because it still works, I'd say 80% of the time. I'd say there are some games where it doesn't take at Fenway, but I say most of the time it does. And my kids still love it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you need the buy-in, right, for the Wave, and you need the right atmosphere. You can't be down like 15 runs, and you need to have the right crowd. Sometimes that actually works.
Well, you need some dope in center willing to fail like...
Like Crazy George Henderson.
Crazy George Henderson. Sounds like he bounced around a bit. I wonder why he changed jobs. Your
claim to fame is your nickname is Crazy George Henderson. I went to college with a guy that we called Crazy Dan. And he wasn't like crazy. Like he wasn't like that kind of crazy, but he was out there.
So do you know what Crazy Dan's doing now?
Crazy Dan is in Buffalo, New York. He's still plugging away, like, working as an electrician and doing his thing.
Has a family and stuff?
Has a family, yeah. So he definitely lived up to his name in college.
Some little Crazy Dan's. All right, listen, we got a couple of minutes left here. I didn't know it was the anniversary of Tommy John surgery.
Yeah, 50 years ago today, the first surgery, obviously.
50 years ago, Wednesday,
September 25th, 1974, was the first Tommy John.
On Tommy John,
performed by Dr. Frank Job. And what they did was they took a ligament from his wrist and did it. I don't think they do that anymore. I think they take it from like your hip or something like that, right? Or somewhere else. I don't think they take it from your wrist. But so they performed the surgery on Tommy John. They told him it was like 1 in 100 chance it was going to work. And it worked. He went on to pitch 14 more years and got 164 wins. Now, the crazy thing about this is that surgery wasn't performed on anyone again until 4 years later. And it was performed on a guy named Brett Strom, who's the pitching coach for the Arizona Diamondbacks now, and he never pitched again.
Never made it back.
No.
But it became, now I've again, tangentially, it became the type of thing, not so much this year and last year, but there was a stretch there where in the minors, it almost became a default where you wanted to get it because you added a couple MPH to your fastball.
Yep.
And now, but now I'm being told that there's other procedures that work around it that don't make you sick. Because Tommy John, it's a little quicker now, but like generally speaking, it's a full year at least.
Yeah, and it's not just pitchers. I mean, a lot of players are getting it.
Right, too. But it's mostly pitchers, yep. But now I'm told there's some procedures where you don't have as much downtime, where you might not get an extra mile or two necessarily, but you're more durable, that Tommy John is actually becoming less of a default move by people. I don't know what the deal is with it, but I've seen some stuff that its heyday, it may be past its peak in terms of
Well, interesting thing you say that, Brian, because in my research it says that 30% of active major league pitchers have had Tommy John surgery.
I believe that.
That's over a third.
I believe that.
That's pretty impressive. You know, and then, like you said, then there's guys like Garrett Cole, who probably, you know, if they were freaking out, could have been a
candidate
for that, but went for the rehab. Same thing with Tanaka, if you're looking back in the history of the Yankees. And I'm sure there's all sorts of, you know, examples over the last 50 years of Major League Baseball where people decided not to do that. But obviously, most recently, the biggest name would be Shohei Ohtani, who's sitting out this year, who I still think you'll see him pitch again in the playoffs.
And next week, we'll sort of break down the historical. Yeah, I think we'll do, I don't know when we'll do MVP talk, but between Judge and his performance and Ohtani and what he's done and Bobby Witt Jr. and what he's done, you know, there are some all-timers playing the game right now, for sure.
Yeah, baseball is a very exciting time right now, especially with all the different records and broken. It's funny when you say all these records, and we made a huge deal. I think it was like back in 89 or 90 when Jose Canseco did 40-40.
Mm-hmm.
And Jose Ramirez is about to do 40-40 for the Guardians, and no one even cares about it. It's like, right. You know, the bar is like, yeah, well, you hit 40 home runs and steal 40 bases.
Well, and then we had 20 years when nobody stole bases, and now the pitch clock has brought back the stolen base, and so now all of a sudden, it's like the stolen base statistic is almost like, it's strange because there's been such an ebb and flow. In the Lou Brock, Ricky Henderson days, they were stealing 125 bases a year.
Yeah.
And then it went down where the league leaders were like in the 60s or whatever. And now they're back where a guy like Ohtani's stealing like 50, 60 bases. And it's just I like the fact that the stolen base is more of an integrated part of the game because at the lower levels, it's really important and how you do it and when you do it. So I saw a play the other day. We got to go. I saw some guy, a college player, who scored on a sack fly from second.
Yeah.
I'm like, there's nothing more
I believe
exciting
it.
Than that.
I think you see that every once in a while.
Duran can do that.
In professional baseball, every once in a while. Yeah. Not from Gleyber Torres, though. You will not see that from Gleyber Torres.
He's John Senecal. I'm Brian Shackman. You've been listening to Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age. Wisdom, experience, and knowledge. Just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain. All symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.